The annual point in time count of Oahu's homeless population provides the data on which much of local government policy is based, and the 2017 survey is the most comprehensive one to date, expanding its reach to ask questions and gather information that should provide stakeholders with a greater wealth of detail than they've had before. Earlier this morning, we discussed the 2017 Point of Time Count After Action Report with Partners in Care Director Jennifer Stosch.
I think what we learned is we were able to take the information that we gathered during the 2017 point in time count, and we did a lot of analysis this year. In the past, we really limited our analysis to the data that HUD wanted, which is the federal agency, Housing and Urban Development,
right,
who requires us to do this count. But after meeting with community members and stakeholders and other organizations in the community, we really recognized that this information is very useful and needed for planning purposes.
Mm-hmm.
We have a big problem here. Nobody denies that. But understanding that problem is critical to formulating effective solutions.
What information is most essential to understanding?
Well, I think most essential to understanding is understanding the subpopulations that were surveyed this year. This was the first year in 2017 that we took the race question and we said, check all that apply. When we report this data to HUD, we actually only report this in five race categories. And so we actually looked at all that apply. And what that allowed us to do is get a lot of information about those that reported to be Native Hawaiian. And it was pretty alarming, quite frankly, to see the numbers with 31% of those that are homeless on Oahu being Native Hawaiian.
Well, you know, just, I mean, I have to laugh at the notion of there being only five race categories. Anybody who lives in Hawaii
yes.
knows how absurd that is, right?
Yes.
So that right away expands the reach of the information you can gather.
Right, right. And understanding, you know, children. I mean, we found that 23% of the island's homeless population were children under 18. And to us, we went, wow, that's something that we need to look at.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at these larger numbers and looking at subpopulations that seem to be trending mm-hmm. Is really important for formulating solutions and combating this problem.
Just saying, revealing that that high percentage of children kind of takes away the argument you hear about the homeless as in terms of the decisions they make. They want to do this, they want to do that. Children go where their parents go, right?
Children go where their parents go. And children often don't have a choice to receive services.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Access to services is dependent upon their parents accessing or their caregiver accessing services.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually heard of stories where outreach teams are out there trying to get people to go into shelter and trying to get families to access services and hearing about children that are literally pleading with their parents to go into shelter and parents refusing. And then the children don't go into shelter either.
What kind of reasons are given for not going into a shelter?
You know, there's a lot of reasons given. You know, there's reasons regarding, you know, not wanting to follow rules. There's concerns of safety sometimes. There's lots of different reasons that people don't want to go into shelter. We hear, you know, recently, as we saw in yesterday's newspaper, you know, there's a lot of people that have pets. The shelters don't allow pets. Most shelters don't allow pets. And so most often people will make the choice to be unsheltered as opposed to surrender their pets.
What kind of health care issues do you run into?
Oh, so many health care issues. Mental health in particular, substance abuse disorder, and the combination between mental health and substance abuse disorder is just, you know, a really tragic situation for anybody that's struggling on the street. And when I hear people say that, you know, people choose to be homeless, you know, substance abuse disorder and mental health issues, you know, these are health issues that nobody chooses to have. Addiction is not something that somebody chooses to have. So I think it's really important for us as a community to understand the issues involved and to empathize with those that are suffering. I hear often pointing the finger of blame. I think that's an easy way to take responsibility from ourselves. I think it's really important that when we're looking for who to call and who to formulate a solution to resolve homelessness in our community, the first place we should do is just look in the mirror, because we all have a responsibility to combat this issue.
That's a pretty wide social shift that you're calling for. Are you optimistic about being able to bring it about?
You know, I'm optimistic about being able to bring additional stakeholders to the table to formulate a solution. I think in the past, as far as Partners in Care and just our purpose, we're a membership organization that came about through a federal grant, the Continuum of Care grant that everybody hears so much about, that's basically about $9 million that we have to figure out how to allocate in the community. And right now, we allocate pretty much all of that towards permanent housing that goes directly to providers to provide tenant-based vouchers. So with that said, you know, our $9 million to $10 million is a real drop in the bucket as to what is needed to combat this problem. So it's essential that we're partnering with the City and County of Honolulu, that we're partnering with the Homeless Programs Office that, quite frankly, receives most of the dollars to provide homeless services in our community. They fund almost all of the outreach services. They fund all of the emergency shelters. So partnership is really important. And I emphasize that because we've actually this year developed a really wonderful partnership with Queens Medical Center, who reached out to us and said, you know, we're seeing so many people that are experiencing homelessness in our ER. And, you know, we want to really help. You know, we want to help from two perspectives. One, we're seeing the financial impact on our bottom line regarding this issue. And number two, we want to find out why they're not getting to where they need to get. So that partnership has provided a lot of information for us.
Jen, when you talk about things like the burdens placed on emergency rooms, you get the situation that I'm sure you run into again and again, where a lot of investment, increased investment up front would mean decreased investment, decreased cost down the line.
Exactly. A proactive approach to resolving this problem is essential. And we've been very reactive. We've been, you know, kind of chasing things around regarding enforcements. You know, enforcements, I understand, you know, the need to reserve public spaces for public purposes. But I also know that those persons that are being displaced through enforcements, they're not all going into shelter. And now we're, you know, they're being scattered throughout the community. And as I read in the paper yesterday, you know, the strategy for those persons is to go out of public view, is to essentially hide now. And so I'm concerned that we aren't going to be able to deliver the essential services that we need to those individuals.
I just passed a displacement on my way in this morning of a, you know, a robust homeless community that was being moved along. And chances are, what, you know, ballpark guess, how many of them are going to end up sheltered from being moved out of a park today?
Well, at this point, I think when we see the statistics, you know, probably, you know, no more than 10% typically choose to go into shelter through these enforcements. I think as we work with the shelter providers and we work with the community to make our shelters a place that are welcoming to come, and I'm not saying that they're not, but obviously people are choosing not to go there, and we need to figure out why and what we can do to influence them to want to seek shelter.
Do those displacements seem cost effective in terms of the what it takes from city resources to bring them about?
It seems that, you know, it seems we could invest, put a lot of dollars in permanent housing, put some dollars in what we call bridge housing, which is a kind of a temporary situation as you're looking for that permanent option. But it puts a roof over somebody's head immediately so you can start to deal with the issues and help them start to get their life back in order. As we know, you know, housing and a roof over your head is usually the first step to being able to get yourself where you need to be as far as a person that's living happy and productive in life.
There would seem to be an intersection between the reluctance of people to go into shelters and mental health issues.
Yes. Distrust is and you know, I have to say, I had a personal experience with a woman who had been discharged from an emergency room. I came across her on a weekend. She was a 73-year-old woman who's been living homeless for over 10 years. She had been in and out of shelters. And as I sat and talked to her, I kept saying, you know, why won't I let me call a shelter. Let me take you to the shelter. And what her comments were to me is, they don't care about me. I don't want to go to the shelter. I don't feel trustful of them. So I think it's really about relationship building. And I know for people that have mental health issues and, you know, they've lost all of their support via family and friends, they've given up on themselves. Most people don't even think that they deserve care and services. And it's very sad. And it's up to us to remind them that they matter.
Jen, if you were sitting here with a, you know, public-spirited billionaire who said, what can I do to help you? Let me put a large number of resources at your disposal. What would you do with them?
Oh, well, obviously we'd invest more in permanent housing, focused on permanent housing opportunities for those that are living at 30% of the average median income. Most of our affordable housing developments that are coming on board here in our community really are targeting those that are 60 to 80% of the AMI, which is essentially you and I sitting in this room. So I think it's really important that we're building housing solutions for those that are not going to ever have that income. They're not going to ever be able to afford to compete in the market rate here. So we have to have the subsidies, and we have to be able to make sure that we can provide these housing solutions. And so I would say investing in housing solutions. I would also put a call out to anybody that is a landlord out there. If you're a landlord and you own a rental property, it's really important that you don't have restrictions on your relationships with tenants, such as no vouchers. If you look at Craigslist today, you'll see that there are many listings that say no voucher. And essentially what that means is they're not going to take anybody with Section 8. They're not going to take anybody with a COC voucher or a VA voucher. And so what that basically says is, I don't trust you. You've experienced homelessness. That means you aren't necessarily going to be a good tenant. And quite frankly, that is an absolutely false perception. There's no evidence out there whatsoever that indicates that somebody that's experienced homelessness is not as good of a tenant as you and I.
I can hear the landlords responding to that rather differently than you just described.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of responses do you get when you say that to landlords?
Well, I would say you need to show us the data. showing data, there is no data out there. I think it's much more about a misconception. It's much more about stigmatizing people and creating an us and them environment. Of course, you have to be a good landlord. You want to be able to meet your bottom line. You've invested in property. You want to protect your property. That's completely understandable. But, you know, presuming that somebody that's experienced homelessness, who has come in hard times, won't be a good tenant is really not a productive way of thinking.
Are we moving away from an us versus them
approach? I hope so. I really hope so. I see it in certain, you know, communities that we're working with. I think a good example of that is the LEED project, which, if I can get the acronym right, it's a Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. And it is a pre-arrest diversion program in partnership with HPD. And it's basically working in partnership with them to provide other solutions than having to take people into custody or having to provide people with citations. Instead, let's work in partnership to create a solution and understand that somebody sleeping at a bus stop, it's probably a better idea to connect them to services than to provide them with a citation that will prevent them from getting housing resources.
Jennifer Stosch is the director of Partners in Care, whose 2017 point in time count after action report has just been released. You can link to it through the Conversations Facebook page.